This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Anti-racist activities are demonstrating and activists are demonstrating all across the country in response to police brutality against people of color, particularly African Americans. In 1968, a presidential commission formally recognized that racism against black and brown people led to civil unrest. It was the first time that an official government report called out white racism as the root cause of racial violence. And at the time, it surprised a lot of people for the progressive view that it took. But in the 50-plus years since its release, the report has come under scrutiny for what some critics say are serious omissions. Topping the list is the failure to investigate the roots of white mob violence. Keisha Bentley Edwards co-authored the paper, How Does It Feel to Be a Problem? The Missing Kerner Commission Report. She is also director of Health Equity Working Group for the Samuel Du Bois Cook Center on Social Equity at Duke University and joins me now. Keisha, welcome.
Hi, how's it going, Frank?
It's going okay. You and I are about to have a conversation about what we have learned as a nation through our many years of political violence, a nation born in political violence and has known it ever since. So in that context and in that framework, we should talk about the Kerner Commission, which was commissioned to investigate the root causes of violence, street violence in the 60s. Talk about the Kerner Commission and what it was and what it was charged with doing.
So the Kerner Commission, it was charged to look at the causes, consequences, and solutions for the uprisings that occurred across the country, particularly in what's often called the long, hot summer of 1967, where you had riots or uprising occurring in 24 major cities across the country over several days. And they were happening back to back, and it was just nonstop. And people were confused. They were saying, well, why is this happening? We just had the Civil Rights Act for anti-discrimination. We had the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Why are the black people, or as we were called at that time, Negroes, why are the Negroes so unhappy? And so there was some confusion, both genuine and disingenuous confusion, about why black people were still upset and why they were letting this anger out in this way in the context of the civil rights movement occurring as well. And so you had people protesting. Unemployment was high. Police brutality was everywhere. And that's something that people often don't think about the civil rights movement as fighting, which was police brutality. And then you had a housing crisis that was going on because housing was still segregated. You had limited housing, especially in major cities, and there was limited, and there was also contract housing, and just a lot of exploitation on black banking. Even when it came to getting furniture, there was a lot of exploitation financially that was occurring during that time period. And that's what a lot of these uprisings were about, but especially around police brutality.
And this is a commission that is authorized and commissioned. It's a presidential commission. Lyndon Johnson authorizes this commission. And who makes it up? Who's on this commission?
So that was also something that was pretty progressive. You had Edward Brooks, the first black elected senator in the North. And then you had a few civil rights activists. So it was an interdisciplinary of academics, of policy wonks. You had legislators that were all in this team. You had black people. You had a few women that were on there. So there was a lot of innovation for that time period, and some would argue even for now, about who was part of this, who was part of this team. So I think that was one of the driving forces why they were able to say white racism. And that was something very specific. They said white racism was the root cause of these protests. The problem is that even though white racism was looked at as the root cause, black people were still seen as the problem that needed to be fixed, rather than looking at ways to eliminate white racism and systemic oppression.
But the report did call for better housing, for better policing, for better ways, more accountability. I mean, it did point to some solutions that address directly some of the issues that you say led to, and the commission as well. I mean, when you say it sort of still blamed Black people for the problem or made them the center of the problem, how so?
Well, there were a few different ways. So there was an issue of Black people not being willing. So not only were Black people not able to assimilate, but there was a problem of Black people being unwilling to assimilate into mainstream or white society. An underlying belief of social deviance as part of the core of Black character, and borrowing from the Moynihan Report, that had just come out the year prior, this idea of Black family disorganization. So one of the things in our paper that we talk about is missing is Black women. And in that report, Black women show up when we're talking about problems in the Black family, that there are these that there are too many Black families that are headed by women instead of having what you would call a nuclear household. And they did point that a lot of this had to do with unemployment, underemployment, and not just absent fathers. But there was still this weight of family disorganization being a Black woman's problem, and that was part of the underlying issue of social deviance and failure to assimilate.
Yeah, so this is fascinating. You have a report that for the first time calls out white racism. It says we need to create more jobs and we need to be more fair in the way jobs are distributed. But then it subverts itself by saying, and, you know, part of what this has led to is women-led families that have emasculated men and caused deviance among Black families. So once again, you know, you start out by saying we need to make these reforms and ultimately pathologize the Black family, and that's what you're left with.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And so the other aspect that was missing is that even though this was looking at social disorder going on across the country, there was no deep inquiry about white social disorder or white racial violence. And that was something that this blows my mind. Obviously, I wasn't in the room, but looking at things from a historical lens, up until 1963, if you talked about a race riot, you were talking about a white mob going into Black communities and tearing things up. And that was typically how you thought about a race riot, which is very different. In 1963, it changed based off of the Birmingham riots that occurred after the attacks on children, as well as the bombing of Martin Luther King Jr.'s brother's home that occurred all around the same time. And so that was when you had a shift when you would look at uprisings as being something that Black people were doing. Prior to that, you had this unrelenting, is particularly when you talk about the period immediately after during Reconstruction, immediately after Reconstruction, up until about 1943, it was a constant barrage of white racial violence, particularly in what's called the Red Summer of 1919, where you had these mobs that were going into major cities in the North and in the South and destroying Black communities, murdering people en masse.
I mean, let's stay right there for a minute, the Red Summer mm-hmm. of 1919, and talk particularly, because you mm-hmm. have examples in the report, talk about some of the particulars and what happened in some of those cities.
Well, you know, one of the things that I talk about is Beck and Tolney's theory of the triggers and underlying circumstances of white racial violence. And so you have to have this violence potential, access to weapons, and the complicity of government forces. And then thinking about the underlying circumstances of that period, which is very relevant to right now. So 1919, we're dealing with COVID right now. Back then, they were dealing with the Spanish flu. We were coming out of World War One, and so you had a lot of Black soldiers who were coming back like, wait, I just defended America. I deserve some respect now that I'm back on U.S. soil. So you have this Black progress and this perceived of a threat of white social status, of this underlying circumstance. And then what would often happen is a threshold event. Most of the times during that particular year, it was a police brutality event. But other times it was the protection of white women. Around that same time, it was a too much celebration. So when Jack Johnson won his boxing match over Jeff Jeffries in 25 cities, there were white racial violence to diminish that joy. And these were brutal and that were coming in. So you had, it wasn't just the killing of people, but it was also the destroying of Black institutions. So you had the destroying of Black banks, Black hospitals, Black schools, Black politicians, as well as newspapers and journalism. So, and also disenfranchisement, as well as disenfranchisement and also the taking away of weapons. Because one of the misperceptions about African Americans is that we have never fought back. And during this time period, when you had this mob violence coming to people's homes, burning up people's homes, burning up communities, folks were fighting back. They were shooting back and trying to defend their homesteads. But because of the complicity of often the sheriffs and the government, the federal government, you just can't overwhelm the system. And during that period, you had cities and states who did investigations, and even Congress. When you look at the violence that occurred, the St. Louis massacre, Congress did an investigation. But at that time, you had Woodrow Wilson, who was president. And if you know anything about Woodrow Wilson, you would know that he was not necessarily a friend of Black people. So although he had publicly admonished the St. Louis riots, he felt that it was not a federal concern. So there was no presidential investigation to these riots. And what you find again and again, there's no investigation. Even when you look closer to the time of the Kerner Commission report of the 1960s, you still had Alabama was getting bombed. There were 50 bombings over a 10-year period in Birmingham alone. You had, including when the four girls were killed in 16th Street Baptist Church, there was no presidential investigation into this white violence. And oftentimes in this white violence, initiated violence, you had the loss, a predominance of a loss of Black lives, and a predominance of a loss of Black-owned property.
And little in the way of legal repercussions.
Absolutely. There were very little legal repercussions, but also the way that we account for the loss. Typically, the way we account for losses is through insurance claims. But besides for the difficulty in getting insurance as a Black person, you also had a small clause called a riot clause. And that was an issue that occurred in 1921 during the Tulsa race riots, is that in Greenwood, when people actually tried to file a claim, they found out that their insurance had a riot exclusion so that they could not actually get a proper report of what their losses were. So once we get into the 60s and there is a loss of white-owned property and you still have a loss of Black lives, that's when you start getting presidential commissions. And you can see that from the 1960s and even when you think about 5 years ago when President Obama created the 21st Century Policing Task Force.
Right. But and this goes back to 1898 in Wilmington, and we don't need to recount that whole story. Yeah. But what is important about Wilmington and all of the stories that follow the white mob violence that has gone mostly uninvestigated since was that if you had, you would notice that it happened mostly when whites became concerned about Black progress, when African-Americans
Absolutely.
Were doing precisely what I guess they had expected, to integrate into the middle class and become successful. That's when white anxiety rose to a flashpoint and the mobs began to go wild.
Exactly.
And that's an interesting point, because if you had investigated that, you wouldn't have been so surprised in 68 when the Kerner Commission came out with its findings. But secondly, you would have been able to address. So what would you do with that? Had you known that in 1940 and 1930, that this was the sort of precipitating event and this was what was going on, how would that have helped?
You know, I think that if you actually, part of it, you have to look at white rage as a problem, as something that needs to be addressed. So if you are very comfortable with the status quo, you don't think it's unusual for white people to get upset because the status quo is shifting. And so I think having that as a precursor to say, why are black people so angry? The civil rights movement led by Martin Luther King, the nonviolent ideology, that was like, okay, we tried fighting back before when we were faced with white supremacy. Let's do something different. Let's create this nonviolent strategy that prompted extrajudicial violence. And that worked for a while because it put a spotlight on the U.S. for the rest of the world. But once people realized that that's what was going on, it wasn't working anymore. And so these uprisings occurred because people felt like nonviolent strategies were no longer working. And we knew at that point that people valued white-owned property over black lives. And so that was the way both the nonviolent strategies of the 50s and, early 60s, as well as these uprisings that occurred in the late 60s, were about attacking white money and white image. And that was what was going to work. And that's what you saw, how you saw changes, or at least proposals, major proposals on changes to the police force. You had the Fair Housing Act that came out shortly thereafter, but that was kind of a confluence of both the Kerner Commission report coming out, as well as the death of Martin Luther King a month later, that played together to allow those things to happen.
And we touched on it briefly, but I'd like you to amplify these thoughts about also the treatment of women and the way women were characterized in the report. Talk more about that.
Yes. So one of the things that I found fascinating, and our co-author Cynthia Spence is an expert on looking at criminology and black women, is how you can see these parallels even to today, where there were black women who were involved in these uprisings, and they acknowledged that the majority of the people who were the black people who were involved in the uprisings were black men, but it didn't say that black women were not involved. So although there was why are black men so angry? What do we need to do to help black men? There were no questions on, well, why would black women do this, particularly young mothers? Why would young mothers and these young women go into these dangerous environments as well in order to fight for progress? Those questions, they may have been asked, but they weren't included in the report. So in the report of the qualitative interviews in the 23 cities that they did these interviews, they only reported on men's responses, both the qualitative and the quantitative. And even when the black men in the studies, in their studies, talked about black women and how part of why they were fighting was to protect black women from abuse and particularly sexual assaults from white men who were coming into their communities and attacking black girls, this also was kind of brushed aside as well. They made a lot of comments in Orlando, both real and imagined, including, you know, unfair housing, sexual assaults on black girls by white men. But, you know, there was never any distinction of what was real, what was imagined. And this was never pulled out about looking at the rapes that were occurring and as part of the white racial violence that was occurring at this time as well.
I've only left you 30 seconds for this, but what do you make of the demonstrations that are going on today that started in violence but have now calmed to demonstrations that are biracial? What do you make of it?
You know, I think that, unfortunately, money, you have to attack people's pockets. And so I think that this is part of a long history of black people fighting back, but also understanding that that you have to keep pushing forward. So that's how I look at it. You know, I'm always concerned about COVID. I'm still in the health equity world. So as long as people are taking those into consideration, keep fighting a good fight.
Keisha Bentley Edwards, co-author of the paper, How Does It Feel to Be a Problem? The Missing Kerner Commission Report, director of the Health Equity Working Group for the Samuel Du Bois Cook Center on Social Equity at Duke University. Keisha, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.